Dear Montessori colleagues and friends all over the world, hello and welcome. This is Montessori Institute Prague podcast, Montessori love stories that need to be told. My name is Mirka. I'm the host of this podcast, and I'm really excited that you're listening to us right now, and I really hope you're going to enjoy this. Welcome to my podcast, too. So the idea of the podcast, and I've shared that with you, is I would like to capture Montessori stories of people that I know. And I call this podcast Montessori Love Stories, which need to be told. And the main purpose of it is for us and for me to capture and for you to share with people about your love for Montessori. So I have a couple of very simple questions for you. My first question is very simple, but at the same time, it's a bit tricky. Some people get surprised by it. Who are you, Sue?
I think I'm my mother's daughter. And my mother was just 16 years old when she got married. And I think she was, to some extent, escaping a not perfect childhood. And she met my dad, and it was the end of war times. And then I was the third. We all came very quickly, one, two, three. My mother was a person that didn't really get to, in her lifetime, see her full potential. I think that when you asked me that question, that's just very quickly what comes into my mind was that I didn't always have a lot when I was growing up, but I always felt like my life was full of possibilities. And very much that was what my mother wished she would have had and didn't have. Anyway, I guess that's the best I can do with that tricky question.
That's interesting, because when I think about you, as I have known you for some years now, when you say that your mom wanted you to have a life of possibilities, I'm thinking of you as a person who helps people to have a life of possibilities as well. So that makes a lot of sense.
When I think about it, that was a theme for me. And I always think of the most important people in my Montessori life were the people who believed in me and also who opened doors, who helped me see what I needed to know, both pedagogically, but just in terms of the profession. And those kind-hearted people, they see the future and they see what support they have to provide.
I think you're in the right place in this podcast, because one of the purposes of this podcast is to help people who are listening to us see that there are doors opened for them and that they can learn from other people and that they can always seek support. I feel that we in Montessori global movement really need to start working on learning from each other and learning from other people's lessons, because what I observe is that many people struggle alone on their own, doing the same mistakes and learning the same lessons. And we do this like over, and my heart is broken when I see that. It's exactly the reason for this podcast, to share our stories so that people can learn from them. Obviously, the next question is, I would like to know, what was your life before Montessori? And then the question after that will be, how did you first hear about Montessori? And then a little bit about your Montessori journey. So however it comes in your mind and your heart, just go ahead and share. Thank you.
As I said, I was the youngest of three children. I grew up in Central California, and pretty typical childhood and public school. There wasn't anything that particularly grabbed my attention. I wasn't one of those prodigies at age eight on any particular thing. One of the most important changes in my life was in my second year of high school, I discovered public speaking and competitive speaking. For the 3 years that I was in high school, I did competitive speech. So I did both debate and extraneous, or what you would call very quick, responsive public speaking. And it just was something that I did really well. I never thought that I was verbal before that. And the skill that you learn when you do public speaking within that structure is you learn to think quickly on your feet, and you learn quickly how to read your audience and how to put together your thoughts out in front of yourself. I think that skill was something that I did well, and it was the first time I had that feeling like, this is something I'm getting better and better at. And then I went to school, graduated from University of California at Berkeley, had lots of interest, had Spanish language all the way through my high school and college, but I had never traveled anywhere. Maybe I got from California to Nevada, but my family didn't travel. I don't remember taking a flight until I was probably maybe 20, 21 years old. But to make a long story short, after I finished all that and was trying to figure out what to do, I had a cousin who became a flight attendant, and she did this about 6 months to a year before I did. She said, "You really should do it." And it meant that I could travel. And I also made a lot of money doing it. So then I could put money together to go back to school. And I had planned to go back to school and get a master in science so I could become a nutritionist. That's what I wanted to do. And on this flight, the person that I was rooming with was reading The Secret of Childhood. She had planned to go to London to take the training. I'm reading from the book. We have this situation where a toddler runs up to the galley and with a bottle and says, "Lecce, lecce," because we were coming from Rome. And the mother came in and grabbed the child and started to speak for the child and saying they need milk. We looked at each other and it was my Montessori aha moment. This was what was in the book, this recognition that every human, even these very young children, could express their needs and desires. And our job was to create the environment. So that was my Montessori aha. And interestingly, I got so fixated, I started doing research and I ended up going to take my training before my friend did. So after I quit flying, that's what I did. And I researched that the Atlanta training was really the most interesting one. It was new, but it had several very young trainers, Nikki Hughes and Lillian Bryant and Mary Rudonis Lowe were the trainers, and talked to a variety of people. And my mentor, Margie Sheehy, who was teaching at Marin Montessori School, talked this all through with me. I will also say that during that two-year period when I found out about Montessori and when I took the training, my sister had a very bad accident. And our whole family was rounding the horses to take care of her. And at the end of the 2 years of hospitalization, she had two young children. My mom said, "It's time for you to go take care of yourself now." And I got in my Volkswagen and drove across the United States and ended up in Atlanta. That's the story.
So okay, I'd like to stay with Atlanta a little bit because I just had an interview. One of my previous conversations is with Lillian Bryan, and she told me about how she began the training there. So I would like to hear a little bit more about that. I'm really curious. But what I want to say is that I'm learning some new things about you. This is amazing. There's some things that I didn't know, that you were trained to be a nutritionist. And then did you say that you stayed in touch with this person who you flew with, who had the Montessori book? Did you call her a friend? Yes. So you stayed in touch and she eventually trained in London, or?
Yeah, I've known her all her life. She was originally from Idaho, and she was in a circle of friends that I knew in the San Francisco Bay Area where I came back to. I didn't get back to Marin Montessori right away. I worked in a class of 36 children with an amazing woman, Angela Gonsman, and her assistant, Susan Bernheimer. Susan had trained in Los Angeles. So this is when I came back to California after that year of training in Atlanta. They were just amazing, and I have never seen another person like Angela who could get a group of 36 children in one circle and absolutely mesmerize them. They really were Montessori of spirit, and I was the assistant, and they would not let me give any lessons. They were both trained, and we had this odd schedule that happened in those days, which was two half days. So some children stayed all day, but there was this hour and a half time frame. So children came in the morning, they left, some stayed, and then there was another out full cycle in the afternoon. But what I learned was they gave me the opportunity to learn how to talk to children, how to see what I needed to see. And they did let me eventually create the outdoor environment. So they wouldn't let me give any lessons, not all year. And I was frustrated by February, so they let me create the outdoor environment.
I'd love to see some photos of that.
And that's where I first, I think, I'm not sure I had gone yet to NAMPTA conferences, but that's where Sanford Jones came into our classroom in San Anselmo Angela School, and he did a whole day of music with us. The next big influence was NAMPTA, run by David Kahn. In those days, they were beginning the work with the journals. I'm not sure when the quarterly journals started, but these wonderful people, Sanford, Carol Alver, and Karen Salzman, amongst many, they were like a traveling show. They would go, and David and NAMPTA organized these regional conferences. By that time, I might have had like 3 or 4 or 5 years maybe of experience in the classroom. The first class I took charge of after working with Angela was a disaster, which we all should go through, where we see the worst of Montessori and challenge ourselves to stay above it. But
a disaster we all should go through. That's interesting. What was your friend's name? I keep wanting to ask you. The person on the flight, what was her name?
Her name is Michael Scott.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Michael Scott.
I just wanted to have that captured. And so can we go back to Atlanta a little bit? Because I'm so excited that my stories are starting to connect. That was a new training center. Lillian has trained with Susan Stevenson, if I'm correct. And what was your impression? I run a training center, so I'm really curious. When you walked in, what was your first feeling and how was the training conducted? Tell me a little bit about that. Can you share?
Had I not been a flight attendant and traveled around the world and been in all these weird places, I surprised myself that I took that trip across the U.S. And I had a short time before I became a flight attendant that I worked at Levi Strauss & Company. And my job was to help buy all the parts of the Levi pant. But I knew someone that I had met who was from Montgomery, Alabama. He worked in a different department and he went back to his home in Alabama and was working for public television. And he was the only person that I knew anywhere near. And he said, if you move to Atlanta, you can come and my mother will fix us a Sunday dinner, which was very traditional Southern Sunday dinner. But when I got there, the first person I met was a woman, and Lillian will remember Jo Bell. She's a very tall woman. She this extreme Southern accent, and she was the mother, the mama for everyone in that training center. And she helped us find a place to live. And she just took care of all of us, was always watching how we were doing. And then the three trainers, they were all incredible, very different. Lillian had come from Europe. We all still feel the same way about Lillian.
She's just like a fairy godmother. Yes.
She's ethereal, just so beautiful, the way she talks and moves. The things that come from her, she's just incredible mentor. And Nikki was a little bit more suburban housewife, but she's always very organized and always very clear. And then Mary, who was still very young, had young children, she always questioned. It was always like, why are we doing this and how do we do this? But the essential characteristic of that training was that these three young trainers always argued. They argued about the philosophy. They argued about the presentations. We were still mostly on typewriters, but and we had to draw all of our own drawings. And we could see their thought process about Montessori as they explored everything. It was all about what the possibilities were.
And I can imagine that it kept you thinking about things, right? If you see three trainers and they're discussing and debating about how to do things, you become to understand that there is not just one way of doing things, and that it's, yes, about going in the classroom, experimenting while sticking with the core. So you took notes by hand and then you went home and you typed on a typewriter. And you still have your album?
Yes.
Wow. So when I visit you, if you would kindly show me.
Which album do you want me to bring?
No, when I visit in the States, I don't want you to carry it.
But yes, that's the way it was. And they even had a contest. So we had a contest in each of the areas for who did the best drawings. And the students voted so people could submit. Mm-hmm. So the most artistic album would win a contest.
Okay. So then your training ended. And what happened next?
Walk across the United States and once I got right back, my car broke down, but I had a job lined up with Angela. So that's when I went to work for her. So I worked as an assistant with two trained people, 36 children, but they had a lot of children that had many difficulties. And some of them were children that had processing problems. And I was able to work with those children. They gave me that gift of the challenge of how to help the child that might struggle more than the other child. I'll never be able to thank Angela enough because she really was that person. And I'll just say for the thread, she had someone from London who was her mentor called Mrs. Cook. And I think she was a teacher, not a trainer, but she went to work for Mrs. Cook, whoever that was. Then I had this 2-year period where I had a class and I had 10 children that were between 2 and 3 years old that were in diapers. It was more like a daycare center. I lived in San Francisco in an apartment and a BART train was pretty new, the rapid transit. I got on with my bike and then off the East Bay and rode my bike to work. And I don't like to remember much from that time, but I do remember that because I did a lot of outdoor activity, I had on knickers, like corduroy knickers, when Margot Waltuck came to do my AMI consultation. And anyone that would ever hear this and knows Margot knows she'd often sit during an observation and put her makeup on. Everything she would do to distract you, I think. And she goes, "Where did you get those knickers? I know I used to wear knickers when I was little." I was like, "Oh my God." There's that Margot Waltuck connection. And then with Margie's help, I ended up the next year going to Marin Montessori. And that's where I spent the next 11 to 12 years.
How old were you?
Oh, how old was I then? I think I was about 24, 20-ish. My low 20s after college.
So you weren't married at that time yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. So 11 years at Marin Montessori. Any major learning lessons that you would like to share that people can learn from?
Of course, there were 3 classrooms. It was in a very beautiful place right on the San Francisco Bay. So we walked out the door and there was the bay. I will correct myself. There were 5 campuses at that school that I worked at for 2 years. And my friend Michael Scott was the guide in one of them. But that's also when I met Phyllis Potash Lewis, because Phyllis, who was primary trained but had just finished elementary training, was the elementary trainer at a different campus at that school. So I met her when we did staff meetings. So there was a lot of that Phyllis Potash Lewis thinking and approach that I carried with me. And eventually she came over to Marin. I invited her to consider that. And then she came over and was an elementary teacher. But for many years, it was 3 classrooms. And one of the things that was great about that experience is that there was Margie at one end, me at one end of the 3 classes. And in the middle was this lovely woman, Betsy. And Betsy was AMS trained. So we had all this dialogue about the differences in training, how she did things. And I would say, "Why are you doing the planets? We don't do the planets." And things like that. So once again, I have this great opportunity for dialogue. And yet, for all that time, we never had an administrator at that school. It was a secretary, and we just made all the pedagogical decisions. That's where I learned my craft, and I had the freedom to do that. I think I had the background from training that it's okay to experiment. One of the big experiments that I often tell people about is that Betsy often would bring in a lot of different activities and tools to work with those children. And of course, I needed to bring them in and try them out. And then I went full circle. I've got all the sensorial. I don't need these materials. But if I would have had someone saying, "You can't put those in there," I might not have seen that those same activities, like matching these cards with beads, which beads go next and stringing them, I might not have known as much as I knew. We're always looking. We're always seeing. We're always seeing the potential to adapt the environment to the child. Mm-hmm.
Did you have some guidance? I find it rather remarkable what you're sharing about the experimentation and the dialogue. because I do see that people sometimes come out of AMI trainings and they feel like this is the way to do the presentation. There's just one way and I have to follow my trainer. For me, is a very strong thing that we are allowed to experiment. We are allowed to make mistakes, but then not necessarily always there's this self-correcting ability. In the end, you always came back to the core and to the Montessori materials that you learned about in your training. Did you have somebody who would give you feedback, who would sit in your classroom and give you a little bit of outside perspective and provide the light on your journey?
Yeah, I think that we were really good when I was there, that Margie and Betsy and I always did that for each other. But because Pam Wisner, Pam had been an assistant for Margie and for a couple of years, I think, and then she made the decision to move in and be my assistant. And there were a lot of challenges in that job. The first year I was there, I didn't have extended day. The other, Margie and Betsy had all of these like 4 to 5 year olds and they didn't want them in their classroom. So they gave me all the 4 to 5 year olds. So, you know, those children that are not napping, but they stay and the teachers only want the older children. I'm like, okay, what a challenge that was. But eventually Pam moved into my classroom. And when you have people around you, like my mother, for instance, or Margie, who really believe in you, and they just ask, what are you doing? Sometimes I would go home to my family and nobody would even ask me what I did because they wouldn't even have any idea what Montessori was. And it was too much trouble to find out. So you have to be surrounded by people that are saying, how are you doing? And what's really hard? So Margie was there, but then Pam came in and she was having the experience of a different teacher. And we just grew up together. I couldn't have grown up in those years without those few years that I had with Pam because we were helping each other. Because of the experience with Angela, I always had children that were special learners that had neurodiversity before we knew what neurodiversity was. And every year, I believe except one that I was at Marin, I had a child with Down syndrome in my class. I had a child that was legally blind and we went through all of that of how do I get in tools, coloring, Pentels that had smells so that she could use. So all of that experimentation, I had to deal with my Down syndrome child flushing her clothing down the toilet or escaping. What I saw happening for the children when they adapted to a neurodiverse child was something that was one of the greatest blessings that I've had in the work. That experimentation allowed me to learn all those things without feeling the pressure I feel some people feel now.
Yes, I still want to dwell on this a little bit because I'm still looking for an answer to how, in the end of the day, a guide, let's say an AMI-trained guide, how do they know? After all this experimentation, they have it. I hear a lot of people tell me, but Montessori, it's so experiential. And as long as it's for the good of the child, it's okay. And then what is the for the good of the child, right? How do we decide about that? So can you share a little bit more about how in the end of the day did you know you're doing it right? Imagine I'm asking for you to give advice to somebody who's listening to this, who is trained, who has this dialogue and experimentation mindset, and they're maybe unsure about whether they got it right.
I think in the primary level, our AMI trainers tell us that your training is the first part of the three-period lesson. This is where you have the experience with the materials. And what I see happen is that young teachers now also get distracted. I don't know whether this came from my trainers, but I always had a policy as an administrator that I did not want my new teachers to go to too many conferences in their first year or two. I said, what's in your albums is what you should be doing. But it doesn't always have to be in exactly that order. You have to sit back. I think what happens for a lot of teachers, they don't take their observations seriously. And it quickly skips the observation part. And observation equals data. So young teachers don't realize, number one, you have to give the lessons that are in your album. That is the key. But you won't know which lessons to give and when to give them if you don't observe. And then you have to just give yourself time, because I don't know if Lillian would remember this. I don't still have it, but I often talk about it. Somewhere in my training, they gave us an image of 5 concentric circles. And they said, in the middle is where you are when you start. That's what you have, that inner circle. That's your training. That's your album. And every year, the next concentric circle is how far you can see. And I always remember that. So I was not hard on myself when I could not see everything in the first couple of years. And that instinct that you build of where everyone is, what's in your head. And I think we talked about that when I started working with assistants more. I could say, look at the teacher. You can see how many things they're processing at the same time. So I had, I think, the luck of my time, which is I was not distracted by everything that I could read on the internet about what I should be doing. I wasn't going to online conferences every 5 minutes, which kind of can really deflate your confidence in yourself. Yes.
So trust your training, trust your trainer, trust your album and the presentations in there. Allow yourself to experiment and recognize that things take time before you get it.
Look at every single child for who they are, not who you think they are or who you want them to be.
How long did it take you to get to the point when you felt you finally had get the gist of it? And now, as you say, you have the sense of where everybody is and all of that.
I think probably third year at Marin, which would have been like my 6th year. But remember, I was really struggling to just stay above water.
Mm-hmm. So maybe 2-3 year cycles with children?
At least one. I know we say at least one cycle, but I think at least 4 years. So if you have a lot of support, and once again, we have to talk about the checklist. If you more or less have children from all the ages, if you more or less get children from the time they're young and you can see the cycle, if you don't have brand new children given to you every day that really have needs that you are going to struggle to get to, if you don't get to choose your assistant, the checklist of things that would make it possible for you to relax into being okay with yourself.
Mm-hmm. So end of Marine experience, and what's next?
I went in and out a little. There was a period by that time where my husband and I moved up to Lake Tahoe. But during that short period, about a year and a half, I would come back every month. And that was the first time that we had any kind of administration at the school, the beginning of it. And we also, during that time, added an elementary. It was a failed experience the first time because it was like about 5 or 8 miles away. So I stayed there, and then we moved to Portland. And that was a job move. And when I moved to Portland, by that time I had one daughter. She was a toddler, and I came to Child Peace because I didn't know anyone in Portland. My husband and I had struggled. Are we going to move to Seattle? He had 2 job opportunities, one in Seattle, one in Portland. And I went, that's where the AMI Training Center is. So that's where I want to go. And really was the back door in to the next part of my experience at Child Peace, because they had toddlers and a lovely toddler teacher. And I wanted my older daughter, Hannah, to have an experience of some Montessori. I had no experience with 0 to 3 before that time, only in writing.
So you moved to Portland and you started working at Child Peace.
I actually started volunteering because there was a wonderful person named Gina in the office. The school had about 45 children, and Gina and I got to know each other, and she was interested that I was trained and experienced. Then they started asking me, could I help? So some of it was help. The first 3 years, they did ask me to work, and I worked a little bit. They never paid me. And then I started working more. So it was like that because the school was a disaster. Rita Schaefer was the trainer in Portland. And Rita said, are you sure you want to do that? And then she goes, oh, no, you can do it. Later on, I realized that Rita was just hoping somebody would save the school. And maybe she thought I could do it, but I don't think she was that confident either.
And you did. So you were helping with children And then another major step was that you actually became the head of the school. So how did that happen?
Actually, Mirka, as I was leaving Marin, I made a conscious decision. And I'll be very honest, it was like, now where do I go? I have this child. What do I do? And I decided as I was going through this big change to have a little therapy. So I went to therapy and really tried to figure out where I was and what I wanted to do. And the result of that was I had some skills. I had done some administration at Marin, and I did not want to go back in the classroom because I wanted to have the flexibility to be a mom. And the way I could do that is to administrate. I hadn't planned to work. I planned to give myself some time, but then it presented itself. So from the time I was at Child Peace, I did help in the classroom often, but I went there with helping at the administrative level. So that was a life decision.
And how did it happen? Did they just see your skills and say, hey, do you want to be the head of the school? Or
they had recently fired their head of school and they were just a mess. But there were really good people on the board. One of the people that was on the board, a person that was involved in hiring me, was CPA, an accountant. And he still does the accounting for Child Peace 34 years later.
So this was which year when you took up the position of being the head of the school? So
about 1988, something like that. And then the school had a couple of moves because there were rented space. And then we moved into another rented space. And all of that would take us far too long to go. But then the school started to grow. Right away, I decided to be an AMI school. The program was wonderful because they had infants. And they had really talented people working with children as young as 6 weeks. So that was a wonderful challenge for me. So as I said, yes, I will help. Then it went, I'll help a little more. Yes, would you like to do this more full time? So it was growing. And then it was for many years until about 2000, the school was just for those first years that I was there. It was still just 0 to 6 years. So it wasn't until 2000 that we added elementary. Uh-huh.
So it was a developing, growing experience rather than you being put from one moment to another to a headship position and deal with it. So you were able to assume and learn skills as years have passed.
But I think that I would be really clear that generally speaking at Marin, I saw the board functioning really well. And because it was a teacher-run school, they relied on the teachers as a group to provide their direction. So that was a pretty healthy relationship between the teachers, the program, and the board. And when I came to Child Peace, that felt like a really good people at the board. So I just said, first you have to stabilize the school and make it quality. So that was what they knew that I could do and what I tried to do first. And after that, when the classrooms really became what they needed to be, where the children's needs were really being met, then I began to say, okay, at some point, I think a school takes on a life of its own because the parents' desire is to expand. But I don't know of anything in life that needs balance, like the relationship between a nonprofit board and the school that it is the nonprofit board of. That is fine craft.
I have some experience with that on my own and still learning. So you came there and the school had 45 children. And then under your guidance or with your leadership, it grew to how many?
When I was leaving the school, it was 362. But remember that as I was leaving, I ended up leaving the end of July 2020. So I had the first 4 or 5 months of COVID. And of course, the school probably is not at that
population. Yeah. That's a different story. For another time, COVID and what it did to schools.
Yes, exactly.
So that was quite a growth for the school and I'm sure for the team and for you. And that's what I'm interested in. What made it possible that for you that you did this? What were some of the things that you held onto, your core values or, you know, that's a huge and amazing task you have done, such an accomplishment. What are the things that helped you do it?
I do believe that the people that loved me and said life is possibilities helped me understand what I thought I might like to do, even if I wasn't sure. But I do think ultimately it is the Montessori pedagogy. Somewhere along this line that I won't tell you about in Marin, my husband and I owned a small mountaineering shop. So I think there were a couple things. One is that I had a life outside of the classroom. So one time I went on this 100-mile bike ride, and the children in my class at Marin were able to track where I was. I had a life away from that, from the classroom, so I could always be clearing my head. So I know we call it self-care now. So I do think that was a part of it. And then we had this mountaineering shop, and so I'm really good at cross-country skiing and little things like that. It's hard to say it. When I was teaching young children how to cross-country ski, I would notice that the children under age 7 were not very coordinated and that they couldn't do this with poles, but they want their poles, right? So it's like that Montessori, the thinking around, you have to observe what's happening and then think, what do I do about it? That helps you be a better administrator. And so I just have been lucky enough to have my Montessori story come in a time where I moved from typewriters to digital, and that I had the time to think about what I was doing without feeling rushed. None of our Montessori schools were big enough to think, oh, we have to hire this expert in administration to come in. We grew. And I think the people now that are still at Child Peace or still at Marin that I knew, we grew together. So there is an element of, if you have the position, you have the responsibility, but you are bringing the people with you. You're all growing together. If there's a way in the world that we live that we can reenact that, I am not a believer that you can just be a head of school and not observe your classrooms, not visit your teachers, not ask how they're doing every day. Because all the work I do with whole school leadership and with Kathy and Peter and Mary Lou, all the people that we work with, we support each other to remind ourselves that it is about the whole community and the culture. I wouldn't have even known how to describe culture. I just did what my training helped me to do, using observation data and then the children to guide you.
You say that you had your values straight. You knew what you wanted to do. You wanted the child to stay in the center of attention, and that helped you navigate the way. And growing together, not just the staff or just the children, but you yourself as well. When there was a moment when you were really lonely and things were not going so well, who did you go to, or what did you do in order to navigate those waters? And probably it might have been different people at different times, but is there something that stands out?
Yeah, besides the ones that are always going to believe in you, I think that I instinctively, once again, from that primary experience, and in my training, I learned how to work with an assistant. All three of my trainers were extraordinary, and the differences in their personality and style was helpful. When you have the experience of having a good assistant, you are in a partnership, and you can say to that person, what did you see? I'm not seeing this. And someone that you had an authentic enough relationship with, that they could say, you know what you're doing, what I see you doing, then that's what you build on. And what happened for me at Child Peace is that, I don't know, there were two people in the office when I started, I think. And now some of my closest friends are Chloe Cohen, who has now left Child Peace, and Rose Rogers. And they came in as very young people, 1 year apart. They learned everything. So first they were the front desk, and then they learned bookkeeping, and then they learned this skill, and then they learned that skill. And there was always this partnership within, as the school grew, of those people that I can trust to ask the hard questions. And then you have to have those people outside of your immediate environment. I knew Peter, I knew Kathy. Who were those people? The people that completely inspired me, Karen Salzman. There were so many of those. Carol Alver. I learned so much from Carol Alver. I mean, Carol's background had been working with children who have special needs. So I was doing AMI USA consultations, and I just happened to work with Annette several times and Carol several times, and just see what they saw. I think someone close by that will trust you, like you would have a really good relationship with an assistant, and then the people that love you outside.
And they're people whom you can ask, what do you see me doing? Give me feedback, help me grow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Inevitably, I want to ask you about your AMI experience. How did that happen? AMI board and so you're head of a school and school is doing really well. And at some point you start speaking publicly and you become a consultant. And so just like,
okay, once again, and I'm going to be very honest, it was Margie. And Margie said to me that she said, you have this ability to articulate what's happening in Montessori and it is a gift. And she said, it is not a gift that I have. She said to me one day, I don't know why. And she would laugh because she's such the human. All of the people in her family were in the military and she practiced the Catholic faith. And she said, between being Catholic and having a military background, whatever comes out of me just sounds like I'm telling people what to do. So what happened was I was going to the NAMTA things. I had stepped in a couple of times to do administrative things at Marin. And then I think it was 1983 or something like that. And 1972 was when my training was. And Margie told me that they were doing this consultation training for the very, very first time. And I think you should apply. And I think you had to have 5 years of experience. I wrote the application, the statement of purpose. And it went to Sanford Jones, who was the executive director of AMI USA at the time. And I was accepted. And I went to this long weekend, I think. I don't know if it was a whole week in Washington, D.C. And my mind was blown. There was Betty Stevenson. There was Margot Waltuck. Virginia McHugh was there, not yet the executive director, of course. If I could tell you, Carol Alver was there. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am in Montessori heaven here. And I could tell you the funniest stories. Margot, you only understand if you're Margot, but she threw her fur coat on the table and asked us to walk around the table to do our observations. Describe what you see.
Yeah, here. Some of those things transferred to Europe and to some of our European trainers, because Heidi, in her 0-3 diploma course, she would do the same thing. She'd put a shawl in the middle of the room and put things underneath and then have people look at it for 15 minutes and take notes and then share. So it's actually quite exactly. It's actually quite an amazing exercise. So and, this is in the US, also, too, but then you also served on the board of AMI in Europe, yes?
No, I've never served on the AMI board.
Okay.
But nor on the board of AMI in the US. So it was my consultation training that led me into doing more things like nationally. And so I would be doing that. I would be working with NAMTA. And this is more like after 2000. We're working with David in various capacities and NAMTA. I did some extraordinary work really with Jackie Mon and Jackie Costantino and Terry Ford, who's from Lumen Montessori. So I was so lucky to work with these people who had specific journeys that they were living. And it was an accident that I was the head of MA, Montessori Administrators Association, at the time that the Montessori Leaders Collaborative was forming in 2011. And then I met more people that I knew about. I had known Steve Hughes a little, but that group of people who represented a lot of different organizations in Montessori came together in New York. I think we all felt the same way, those of us who had not known or worked with John Snyder before then. That was an amazing experience. But I was meeting people from AMS that I never knew, and we're having these conversations. And it was just, Andre Riberford was part of that group. It was just an extraordinary experience. And over the period of years that we worked together, until it fizzled out just even a few years ago, it created dialogue. It built bridges that didn't exist, that were just really something to behold.
For the whole movement, yes. I love Andre. He said something that really stuck with me, that there's a lot that needs to be done. And AMI headquarters, be it in the US or in Europe, cannot do all of that work themselves. And he said, so I really urge all of you to understand you are AMI. And whatever you that needs to happen, you go and do it. We have to do this together. You are AMI as we are AMI. So whatever task, pick it up and get it done on behalf of AMI. And that was just like so strong for me.
Yeah. And I would say AMI USA also, and Margaret Stevenson, the number of people she trained in the US, and every year we'd go to the refresher and she would be doing it. And every year was a bath in pedagogy. Her pedagogical knowledge was so extraordinary, and she would just take a topic, and then for 3 days, practically, we would just listen to her just being enamored, her grasp. So I think the population of administrators that had any connection with AMI in the U.S. who grew up as teachers, mostly, not everyone was a classroom teacher, we were just wrapped in Betty Stevens' knowledge of pedagogy, and different people and then different trainers would come in. How do I talk about Joan Bettman? This is like some of these people that many people in other parts of the world don't know about. They were so extraordinary as trainers and as guides and as mentors.
So when I'm listening to you, I'm thinking I'd love to do some kind of a big mind map and have all of the names that you said and that Lillian mentioned and draw connections and do a little history of how this whole thing developed. I'm not sure that sounds like a big task. Maybe we'll see where these stories lead us to in this work. Do you remember when you saw me for the first time? What did you think? I just want to wrap it up to the end of where we are, making the end of the circle. And this is us becoming wonderful friends. And
I think by the time I first met you, because even in the early 80s, then here I'm exposed to a broader Montessori community. But it, as the MOD chair, I did go to the AGM. So then when I went to the AGM, that's where things expanded. If you ever want to do something incredible, we sat on the porch in Simsbury where Mary Lou lives, and she sponsored the first MOD retreat. Those of us that came to that retreat were sitting on this porch in white rocking chairs in the nighttime with, I think, fireflies, telling our Montessori stories. So the story of my air flight attendant story, or Mary Lou's working in Washington, D.C., and I believe at the Smithsonian, and being asked to do some location of Montessori materials. We were all telling our stories. Peter was there. Jim Fitzpatrick was there telling his story and the stories of people going to Bergamo in the 60s and having their babies there. So Ma was everything. It brought those of us, mostly who had moved up out of the classroom as practitioners, because the need was there. I don't think any of us were really natural born administrators, but we seized the time or the moment to say, for this mission to move forward, I need to step up. And I heard something recently, and it was this idea that sometimes you are just in the room. And if you are in the room, you have to take the moment that it is your moment to step up and do what you need to do. And that's what we did in MA. And it wasn't always easy, but that's when we began to have this more international experience. I believe the first time I met you was here in Portland. And were you here in Portland?
Yes, I was. I had a 3-week-old Anna Maria with me.
And I said, who is that person over there? And people would say that you're from Prague. And I'm like, whoa. And then it was that you were the sponsor. So I got that part that you were going to sponsor the next one. So it just sometimes, like in all organizations, I was not always a person on the stage. I was like watching everything. And I just went, that's very cool that these people are so confident. How many Montessori schools are there in Prague? I didn't know the Czech Republic as being this hotbed of Montessori.
Oh, goodness.
So I was looking at you more with curiosity. And I think in between all of that, I'm not sure if I met you at the AGM or Kathy said you have to meet Mirka. And then it was, I'm sorry to say this, but you are such a beautiful human being. And you have this radiance about you that if people see you, like in the crowd, the way you're interacting with people, your laugh, and you're just a person that a lot of people will be drawn to. It's hard not to notice you in a crowd because the way you carry yourself. Mm,
thank you. Wasn't always like that.
I think for most of us that are in leadership positions, I think it's probably true.
Yeah. So it's funny that you say that when you saw us in Portland, you thought we were confident. I was telling my story a week ago to a group of people who came and rented our farm. And I realized I was telling, like, trying to digest to several sentences. And so I spoke about the steps, a family center. And then somebody said, oh, why don't you open a kindergarten? And I said, no way, we're not doing that. And then children grew and somebody said, why don't you open an elementary? And I said, no, we are never going to do that. And I realized that actually, I wasn't confident at all. These things just came. And then there's a moment of you have to decide whether you're going to be brave enough to try and ready to fail, or whether you're going to walk away from it. And I think it was the same with the Congress. We had no idea what we were doing. When my colleague in Prague came to me and said, his name is Marek, and blessings to him for opening up the door to this opportunity, because it made a huge difference in our work in Prague. He said, why don't you send an application? We see this bid. Oh, you have to do it. And I'm like, no way, we're not doing that. Like, yet another time I'm saying, no way, we have no idea. And then I think about it and I think, maybe we can just try and do our best. When I stood in Portland in front of the 2,300 people who were sitting in the room, I've never been in a public speaking situation in front of 20 people, maybe 20, yes, but like 2,300, that was incredible. And I just couldn't think of what to say. And I was just, there was no confidence. I had a very small soul in me right at that moment. But I said, I do remember until today, I said, with these hands, I'm going to try and do the best. That's all I can say. Here's my promise. I'm going to use these hands and my mind and my heart and try to do the best. And so I did. And we learned so much along the journey.
What's funny about having a baby too at that time would be you both get to know that no matter what happens, you'll be able to hold the baby. And on the other hand, it's such an insecure time of life. No matter how many children have that baby, you're not sure. So
yeah, I had my best friend Diana with me, and we laugh every time we think about the Congress, because this is a little bit private, but I will share. When you nurse a child, each child nurses in a different way. And Anna Maria, she was my third, and somehow she just liked to be nursed when I was lying on a bed in a lying position. And she just wouldn't nurse when I would hold her sitting up. So I had to find these corners and nooks in the Portland Congress Center to actually lie down on the floor there and nurse my child. And of course, I had a blanket, all of that. So one of my strongest memories of the Congress there is that there was carpet everywhere. And God bless for the carpet there, because I had a 3-week-old child that I needed to nurse every 2 hours on the floor. So that was so funny.
No, I think Mirka, too, in my life after Child Peace and now my life more working on a consultant basis, I just worked at a school here in Portland. And two of the teachers there were people that started working at Child Peace. So my greatest joy is to feel that I helped invest in these people. And even if we didn't have a job for them as they finished training or went to training, they are out there in this world. And when I can help someone be confident in the work they're doing one-on-one with children, it just playing it forward. And that's what Maria Montessori would want us to do. I don't think she'd worry about whether Montessori is in every classroom in every country. But as long as there's a group of people living it.
Supporting each other and being connected. And yes. And this is, I want to say this loud and clear, that this is who you are for me. And you're always there for me. You cry with me. You celebrate with me. You help me ask the right questions and search for the answers without telling me what to do. And you're one of the best speakers. I'm going to mention an idea later because you made me think of something. But you definitely are so eloquent and able to say in the minimum amount of time the most important things. And I wish I was able to speak and share in such a high level quality and importance and all of that, like you.
Yeah, because I think as a speaker, they'll never, until my dying day, I won't be confident as a speaker. And part that experience from my high school, which was you can't ever be confident, because when you do, you will turn off the possible. When you are, what we would say for a young child being very cocky, when you're too confident, then you won't be open to what's
right. You start learning. Yes. So would you like to share with people who are listening to this podcast how they can contact you if they would like a consultation in their school or in their classroom? Would you like to?
I have limited how commercial I'm trying to be. I don't have a website. I don't have a blog yet. You never know. I might, once I hear your blog, I might go. But my email address is SuePritzkerConsulting@gmail.com. If you're listening to this and you need some help, please reach out. And if I don't know how to help you, I think the wonderful thing about my life in Montessori is that I might know geographically somebody who might be there to help you. And if you're thinking about leadership, invest in a time to do that leadership training. And
please mention that. I was going to mention that. So there are two things you're involved with, and please mention them as well before we wrap up. Okay, thank you.
I'm working, and thanks to Christine Harrison for inviting me into that mold, with the AMI admin course, which is really doing so well. And it's an online 12-week course, or about a week in-person course, and evolving itself out of COVID, and when and how did what format to use. But that course is a great pedagogical background with a lot of practical application. And look for that. So look on the, I'm pretty sure you're going to find it all on the AMI website. That will give you people to talk to. It will really ground you with other people. That's really a course if you don't yet have enough time to invest in your own transformation, your own leadership, but that you will learn, and then you'll have a core of other people with a lot of information. And then the other course that Mirka knows that I'm involved in as a trainer is whole school leadership. And those of us that are trainers for that course, that's built into modules. There are 6 modules for that course, and you can look that up also.
Kathy was actually a guest of the previous episode, so we mentioned that already. Thank you. There are 1,000 and other things I want to ask you, but let's just wrap up with one. I ask every guest, do you have some kind of a life motto or something you go by when it comes to the core? Alternatively, if not, because I know it's a hard question, is there some message that you would like to share with people who are listening about the future of Montessori, or what can we do as individuals?
I think if I think about the hard times in my life, that I really think it's about time, and knowing that everything has its time. If your children aren't getting along, or you're having a struggle at work with a particular staff person, that you are not the center of everyone else's universe, and you don't have to be responsible for everyone else's timing. In my own life, the most challenging times that I had to deal with, you know, a child that at age 5 has a huge medical issue in their life, or an adult daughter that you love very much moving halfway across the world, things take their course. So just like we do with the children, and if you're just still teaching, or if you're beginning to administrate, or just know that things will happen in their due time. And if you can finish your day saying you did your best, everything's going to come out all right.
Thank you. One last question. Of all the people you can think of, who would you suggest for me to have a conversation with sometime in the future in this podcast?
Oh, wow. Who that? I don't know. There are some of those people that I think, like Carol Alver, she's not doing a lot of Montessori work now, but she's so extraordinary. Terry Ford. Terry's not a Montessori trained person, but she has done this work at Lumen in Texas that's so beautiful, so amazing. I think there have been places where I have gone and I got there and I was in tears seeing what was actually happening here. I think those are the kind of places that we need to look for. There are people that are Montessori soldiers. I think of mine as a delicate journey compared to the journey that some people are living in order that more children will have Montessori. I absolutely think that I hope all of us in AMI and out of AMI, we are supporting those people who are living that really hard Montessori journey.
I definitely want to keep I don't like the word interview, having these conversations with more people like yourself who inspire others and who encourage everybody in the farthest ends of the world who have the smallest Montessori dreams and the least hope that they can make them happen to actually go and try. So thank you.
Yeah. And they're not going to always be those of us that have done this a long time. I think some of the schools that are in Nigeria, I think some of the schools in the Philippines, these people are doing work that is truly noble work. And so I hope maybe not far enough in their journey that they're ready to tell it yet. But we have,
as you say, really things happen in their due time. So if there are people out there, it's likely that somehow our paths are going to cross and I will be able to ask them questions about their Montessori journeys to share with others. Thank you so much, Sue. Thank you to those of you who are listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed today and you are going to be feeling encouraged and inspired by Sue in your own journey. And if you need any of our help, you know where to find me, and now you know where to find Sue. So thank you very much, Sue, and I'll see you at some other time.
Okay, bye-bye. Love you, Mirka.
Dear colleagues and friends, thank you for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this inspiring Montessori story. I hope it encouraged you. I hope you learned something from it. And I hope that you realize that you are not alone on your Montessori journey. I'm looking forward to speaking with my next guest. And as we say in Czech language, naslyšenou in 2 weeks. Yours with love, Mirka from Montessori Institute Prague.